your engine.
Listening to 91.5 FM WPRK Winter Park, Florida, the voice of Rollins College and the best in basement radio. Right now, you are tuned into the Motorsports Hour, talking about all sorts of racing. It happens here on WPRK every Sunday night from 8 to 9 p.m. Let me give you the website to check out, as always, themotorsportshour.com. Check us out online. Find the podcast there, all kinds of good stuff there at themotorsportshour.com. And take us with you wherever you are in the world via the TuneIn app. My name is Clark. I'm your host. Alongside me tonight, as always, Mr. Chris Wire to Wire. Wire, how you doing over there, my friend?
High and dry, brother.
I know. We had a little rain today. It was supposed to be like a ton of rain. It was supposed to be like the end of the world. Sun and fun, you know, the big fly-in that they have every year in Lakeland. They canceled it today. And, you know, a little wind, but nothing too bad.
Well, I mean, if there are flying things that happen, you know, well as trying to get people out when it's done.
Yeah, that's bad.
The weather makes it a little more
difficult. But it was supposed to be, like, awful, and it just kind of wasn't here.
Well, it looked awful on the radar.
It did,
it
but
just
then it
never made it to Orlando.
It's kind of dissipated by the time we got here. So, yeah, high and dry. I spent the day recovering, basically. We had the Dinner on the Avenue last night. Have you seen this before?
No.
This is where Park Avenue here in Winter Park, they shut down Park Avenue, and everybody goes out. There's like 200 tables of 8 people each, and you go out there. They shut down the street. Everybody sets up a table, dresses up as a theme, and everything has a big theme going on and all that kind of stuff. And really, it's an excuse to get drunk on Park Avenue is what it comes down to.
So it's all included?
No. You have to bring your own food, your own booze. You have to bring everything yourself.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. You bring everything on your own, and you set everything up. I don't know what we even did for food. We had plenty of booze. Our theme was Gilligan's Dog Island.
Okay.
I liked it. So we had a big pontoon boat that had crashed onto the table. We had Gilligan's Dog Island going. We had Ginger Marianne, Professor Lovey, and then, you know, of course, Gilligan, you know, and I was, of course, the skipper. It was good stuff.
You should be the skipper.
It was good stuff, man. I am. I am a boat owner. Now only one boat owner, though, which is nice.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's okay. I mean, one at a time, right?
Yeah. Much better than having two. But, you know, hey, anyway.
You miss the sailboat.
No, I do not. I do not miss the sailboat at all. Thankfully, that is gone. That is gone. You know, it was fun the couple times that I actually sailed it. It was nice. The amount of work that goes into it is, a lot. And I don't miss doing that. Don't miss writing the check every month.
It's an investment property. They're money makers.
Yeah, right.
You understand how that works.
Yeah, yeah. That sailboat made a ton of money.
For other people.
For West Marine, mostly. Let's move on from that. Let's talk about racing, because we had some fantastic racing this weekend. The Chinese Grand Prix. We also had IMSA from Long Beach. I think we're probably going to push talking about IMSA from Long Beach back to next week. No Formula One next week. Kind of fill that in there.
A lot to cover anyway.
Yeah, because we had one okay race, I thought, which was Australia. And normally Australia is a fantastic race because nobody knows what to expect. Everything's kind of up in the air. Then we had Bahrain, which was a little bit better, I thought, than Australia. And then we had China this week.
The Heineken.
Yes.
China Grand Prix.
The Heineken Chinese Grand Prix. I guess that they drink a lot of Heineken in China?
One would assume.
Yeah. Well, a fantastic race today. An absolutely fantastic race.
Now, what are the chances, say, after FP3,
right,
you would have called any of the events that happened today beforehand?
Zero. Absolutely zero. Absolutely zero. Well, we will get into that, but first we've got some news to go over, and, well, there's not a whole lot of news going on out there. It's kind of nice. You know, you're just a week in between and not a whole bunch of stuff.
But it's surface type stuff.
Yeah.
You know, Lewis said something somebody else didn't like. Lewis then apologized, you know, blah, blah, blah. Max came under fire for, you know, taking out Lewis's, you know, running Lewis off. You know, it's
yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, it's surface level stuff. No earth moving thing. Lance Stroll said the Williams is slow.
Yeah. Yeah, he said the Williams is slow.
News breaking.
Yeah. I did like this, that Haas has rejected the rumor that Fernando Alonso could move to the team in 2019.
Well, I'm glad they did it, because I here was literally on the edge of my seat.
I know. I thought it was a done deal.
A rumor I had never heard.
Yeah. I thought it was a done deal. You know, Fernando Alonso going to Haas makes perfect sense, right?
Yeah, no.
Yeah, that makes no sense. When was this a rumor, and who started it? And why would anybody give it any credit at all?
You know, I mean, McLaren clearly made moves to retain Alonso.
They got rid of Honda.
So what's to say that, you know, he'd be one and done after they did all that? I mean, we don't know the terms of any contract extension, but is he not still under? Did he have 1 year or 2 years?
I don't know. I don't know what he's got left on his contract, but the idea that Fernando Alonso would move to Haas is laughable, as far as I'm concerned.
The original contract, I thought, was 3 years, and Honda's reign in McLaren was 3 years.
Right.
So, I mean, there had to have been something to replace that. I'm guessing it wouldn't be just 1 year.
Here's the only place Fernando Alonso goes: Ferrari, Mercedes, or Red Bull. And Lewis Hamilton can't be at either of those teams.
Doesn't leave a whole lot of room.
No.
So, Ricardo to Ferrari, Alonso to Red Bull?
Maybe. Or Alonso just stays. I don't know. Let's move on. He's not going to Haas.
He's
I know
not
that much.
Going to Haas.
I know that much. Some interesting, there is some talk that they could get rid of this fuel limit. You know, we have a fuel limit in Formula One. We had that crazy fuel flow thing, too, a few years back. And mm-hmm. then everybody kind of got it under control.
That was a nod to the greenies.
Yeah, Formula One's green.
And you know, they played it up for what it was, and now the last two seasons you've heard none of it.
Nope.
And that's because it's either not an issue, or it didn't curry the favor they were seeking.
Well, one of the reasons why it is interesting, at least, you know, we used to have Formula One engines turning north of 20,000 RPMs. Back in the V10 era, the BMW Williams turned, 20, close to 21,000 RPMs, I believe, in qualifying. Then we had them limited down to 18,000 RPMs. Now, you know, they've said, hey, the limit is, you know, 14,000 or 16,000 or whatever the limit is, but nobody gets anywhere near that number. They get to about 11,000, 12,000 RPMs now. because you can't put enough fuel to the engine at that higher engine speed. Obviously, the higher the engine speed, the higher the fuel flow is going to be. They're so limited on fuel. Anything over like 12,000 RPMs, 11,000 RPMs, it just doesn't do anything. You can't get any fuel flow. You can't make any power out of it.
Yeah, and that's basically just an unintended consequence. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, they instituted that, and nobody really thought that these engines that we were so accustomed to hearing in normally aspirated trim, you know, upwards of 18,000 revs and on the way up to, you know, 22,000 in the glory days, these motors don't want any part of that.
No, they don't. Well, let's move on to the week that was, shall we? Where we have a fantastic race on Sunday, but shall we talk about practice?
Nah.
Let's talk about practice three at least.
Okay.
And that's where we had an old school Kablamo.
It was good.
It was really good. So
it was not at speed, though, which would have been better.
Yeah. You know, my favorite Kablamo of all time, I think, is Sebastian Vettel in the Red Bull in Korea, where you had everything. You had smoke. You had flame. You had some weird noises, some funky noises coming from it. But you also had white-hot bits of metal being expelled from the car and just thrown around the track and bouncing along the ground. That made for a really good Kablamo.
It was really good. And I don't propose to remember that, you know, all of the Kablamos.
Yeah.
But it has to be right up there.
Yeah, I think that is one of my all-time favorites. This one was really good, too. This was Danny Ricciardo in free practice three, where he blew up an engine in a big way. Where it's not we see so many of them nowadays where it's like, oh, the engine just shut off. Engine just shut down.
That was Bahrain.
Yeah, we had some good smoke, and we had some, you know, you could see the contrails from the wing, you know, with the smoke. So we had some really good smoke. We had not just one, but two solid puffs of flame, too.
Good stuff.
Now, no white-hot engine bits hitting the pavement, but we did have the really cool sound of the turbo just essentially imploding.
But it wasn't like, you know, like lug nuts in a coffee can.
No, it wasn't. It was
like the winding down of a nuclear reactor or something. It was really, really bizarre.
Yeah,
it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. It was this sound where it just kind of, and then that was it.
That was it.
Yeah. And that is a technical sound right there. I mean, it was just this really, really intense, crazy sound. And then that was it. Some flames, some smoke, all kinds of good stuff. And that was it. Now, free practice three, of course, is not run on Friday. Free practice three is run on Saturday before qualifying. You know, you have essentially 2 hours, I think, in between the end of free practice three and the start of Q1. So
that doesn't leave much time at all.
No, that leaves basically no time. So pretty much going into qualifying, Danny Ricciardo's race is pretty much done. The idea that they could get the car ready in time. Now, what's so interesting about this is, this was not a, okay, let's go out there, let's pull the engine out and then put the other engine in. Everything is so integrated with these cars now, with the new, you know, the MGU-H, the MGU-K, and all the crazy stuff, and then all the battery power units. It's not like, hey, let's pull that, you know, V8 out of the drag race car over there and then, you know, pop in a new one. I mean, they rebuild those engines between each run. That's how easy it is to, you know, work on those top fuel dragsters and stuff like that. This is not the case. There's so many systems that tie together, and so many things that have to happen for an engine change to occur. It is not like the olden days where you undo a couple bolts, out comes the engine, you take the other one that's sitting on the rack ready to go in, and you pop it in there. It's a much more involved process now.
Well, and it's not even to the level, it's beyond the level of Audi at Le Mans.
Oh, yeah.
It isn't simply a, you know, disconnect the harnesses, everything is on its own subframe, you just, you know, wheel the everything, including the rear suspension and everything. You just wheel that thing off into a corner, you know, buckle up the new one, connect everything that needs to be connected, throw the body work on it, drop it on the ground, and in, what, 36 minutes or something like that?
Well, they did it in 8 minutes was the record, I think.
Well, yeah, this was not that.
No, this is not that. I mean, that whole Audi, the Audi R8, was designed with that in mind. It was designed with, hey, if we have a transmission problem or something, let's just change, let's have it set up so we can change it. They ended up changing all the rules at Le Mans that says the transmission case now has to be the same that you started the race with, so you couldn't do that anymore at Le Mans because Audi basically figured out that we can create this crazy system, change it out in 8 minutes time kind of thing.
That's the Audi rule.
Yeah. Well, this is definitely not that. It is a very, very involved process. Everything is packaged so incredibly tight in the cars. And I think especially the Red Bull, too. You kind of look at, you know, it used to be, and the Ferrari still to some extent, you know, has that kind of flat side pod up at the air inlets. You can kind of see where that is. The Red Bull almost looks like it's so tightly packaged in the rear of the car, how much it kind of slopes up from the floor. Normally you look at old, you know, Formula One cars and they have that area where it's kind of the body is kind of 90 degrees to the floor of the car for at least a little bit. Now it's like it just kind of, it's this magical kind of swoop almost that there's just no flat part on the Red Bull. It's so incredibly tightly packaged.
The magic of Adrian Newey.
Yeah, it is really impressive stuff what they have going on with that car. So we finished. They, of course, he's trying to get him to push the car back because he knows that, hey, you know, we're not talking about minutes mattering here. We're talking about seconds mattering now. He's trying to get him to push the car all the way back to the pits. They don't do that. Eventually, they get it back after practice. They get the car back there. They set to work on it. Qualifying comes. Qualifying starts. No car yet for Danny Ricciardo. Q1 underway. Everybody, you know, about as expected. And then, with what, like 2.5 minutes left, Danny Ricciardo is able to get out in track. And he somehow, you know, gets out of Q1.
Yeah, I mean, I think the pace, you know, once he hit the track was never going to be in question. But just remember that it isn't so much just physically putting the engine and everything back in the car. And you have to recreate all the suspension settings that you had beforehand. And these motors are built so tightly that you actually have to run, you know, heated oil through them to bring up the temperature of all the components so that you can turn it over.
If you win, I mean, they don't have a starter on board the car. So there's no way to, you know, flip a switch and start the car by yourself. Now, let's say there was, and you went out there and you tried to start the car. You'd basically grenade the motor just like that because the tolerances, like you said, are so tight that they have to preheat everything in the car, all the fluids in the car, the water, the oil, everything in the car. They have to preheat it outside of the car, then pump it through the car so the metal will loosen up and expand appropriately, and then essentially the engine would run. I mean, it will not run without it being heated.
You know what they didn't show us?
Mm-mm.
They didn't show us the pit lane proctologist.
No, they didn't. And I love the pit lane proctologist.
He never gets all the credit he deserves.
No, I know. It's not a glorious job.
No.
But I tell you what.
But his aim has to be true.
His aim has to be very true. You got to be perfect as the pit lane proctologist. I think you see it more in IndyCar.
Yeah.
Well, you know, they have the onboard starter that they keep on the, what is the safety team? Homatro safety team now. You know, they keep a... anybody can be a pit lane proctologist if you're on the safety team in IndyCar.
Doesn't mean you're good at it.
No, it does take practice. So, well, nonetheless, we did not get to see that, but they got the car out. Couple minutes left, puts in a lap, you know, checkered flag flying kind of thing, and makes it out of Q1. Everybody else getting you know, knocked out in Q1 was not a huge surprise. I tell you what, I am surprised about the Williams with the Mercedes power plant. That they're not more competitive?
Well, I mean, they're not uncompetitive in straight line speed. In fact, that's, you know, that's the problem for some of the back markers, like a Sauber, you know, that has Ferrari power, and that they may be very well suited to be quicker than them in the twisty bits. But then when they get onto the straightaway, the Williams is every bit as fast as anything else out there.
Yeah. Well, and it was also a back-to-reality moment for Pierre Gasly after finishing, where did he finish, fifth in Bahrain?
Yes.
Finishing fifth in Bahrain, knocked out in Q1.
Welcome to the ball game, son.
Yeah. So all that talk about, you know, last week of, man, McLaren made a mistake switching to...
Yeah, I kind of thought that was overblown. I mean, I wasn't ready to give Honda laurels for, you know, anything more than the one race where they showed well. I don't believe that they're there yet. I'm not saying they won't get there, but I think the hype was premature.
Yeah, well, knocked out in Q1, and his teammate was slowest in Q2. He was 15th, also knocked out. One of the Haases, Kevin Magnussen, and then one of the Force Indias, and then both of the McLarens, Fernando and Stoffel, getting knocked out. Maybe it was not just a Honda, too. I think we're learning this year with the Renault power plant.
Well, hard to say. The factory Renault cars are showing well.
They are. And then, of course, the Tag Heuer, Aston Martin, powered by Renault, is doing pretty well.
Well, yeah. But that's because you have all those names. So
yeah.
The more names you add, the faster it gets.
That's what they need. That's what McLaren needs. They need some more names on the engine.
That would be interesting.
Yeah. That's all they need. They just need to, you know, add another manufacturer, Aston Martin, another watch company. Tag Heuer had a...
Shandong McLaren, Rolex.
Okay. All right.
Omega.
Omega, there we go. Well, you know, Tag was a longtime sponsor of McLaren. They used to be part owners in McLaren, and then they switched their allegiance.
That would be
allegiance.
Cool if they brought that back.
That would be cool.
The Shandong McLaren Tag Heuer, powered by Renault.
I like it. There we go.
Well, Zach Brown.
Let's do it. Get him on the blower. All right, so that was Q2. Q3, who's it going to be? Is it going to be Ferrari? Is it going to be Mercedes? You've got both Red Bulls in there, Max and Danny, and you know, let's see what they can do. You also got a Haas Ferrari in there, a Force India and a Renault. And what we saw, that early pace shown in Australia by the Haases necessarily was not there, really. Roman Grosjean qualified 10th. You had both factory Renaults qualifying 7th and 9th, Force India splitting them, which leaves your top 6, your Ferrari, your Mercedes, and your Red Bull. And I'm thinking, all right, you got these big, long straightaways here. This is going to be Mercedes' game, right?
Well, theoretically, I don't know that we've settled the who's wielding the most horsepower. We just know it's very close.
Well, what we had was a battle for the pole with Kimi Raikkonen leading the way for most of the session. And then you had the Red Bulls kind of coming across the line. They couldn't better his time. You had the Mercedes come across the line. They couldn't better his time. Kimi Raikkonen comes across the line. He betters his time, but then comes Sebastian Vettel, and he pips Kimi Raikkonen there right at the end.
87 thousandths of a second.
I mean, this is really, really close stuff. Really close stuff. And they were almost a half second faster than the Mercedes with Valtteri Bottas out-qualifying Lewis Hamilton.
Yeah, Lewis is not having what I would want to see, you know, the kind of year I'd want to see him have in a contract renegotiation year.
Yeah, no, I'm there with you. He doesn't appear to be on his game as much as he has been in years past.
Here, let me just say this as in the broader sense. I think Mercedes is rattled.
I think they are, too, because this is a track that, in my mind, is going to favor the power of the Mercedes. I'm thinking, you know, everybody, the Mercedes was the engine to have for so long. Now I'm thinking that maybe Ferrari has quietly made an engine that is more powerful than the Mercedes. It was all this talk of will Ferrari catch up to Mercedes this year? I think they might have surpassed Mercedes this year. And I think Mercedes might be down on power to Ferrari.
Well, that's entirely possible. But there was a point made during qualifying that was, I think, kind of overlooked, but it was pretty astute. You remember that, you know, Mercedes had this penchant last year for going out and being, you know, just fast enough to be fastest and everything. And
right.
then as everybody got faster in qualifying, all of a sudden, you know, they turned up the wick.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was almost like they were running at 92 or 93% during, you know, free practice and everything just to stay in the top five. Even if they weren't quickest, they knew they had reserve.
Right.
And, you know, we heard earlier this year about party mode.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think party mode gets them everything that they need. I think it's pretty much full-on party mode all the time now.
Yeah.
Because they have competition from Ferrari, and they can no longer hide any superiority that they had like last year.
Yeah, it's just not there in my mind. That superiority that they had, well, I mean, it's been evident in qualifying, really. And you can look at the sheer speed of the car and what you can do on the car. Take racing and wheel-to-wheel stuff out. I mean, the Ferrari has been the superior car in qualifying this year.
Yeah. And obviously with two wins to their credit, they sit atop everything.
Well, with Sebastian Vettel on the pole, his teammate right next to him, then you have the two Mercedes right behind them, and then you had Max and Danny back there in fifth and sixth. So Danny Ricciardo changed his engine, I'm assuming.
Sure.
Why wasn't he penalized?
I don't know.
Neither do I.
It's possible he went back to an engine from last week that was already in the rotation, maybe?
I don't know. But we have all these engine penalties. Here's one going, Kablamo in free practice three. They obviously change it, get it ready for qualifying, and no grid place penalty, which I'm all for. I wish we could just get rid of the grid place penalties altogether.
Sure, but you want it to be a transparent level playing field.
Yes. And I saw...
Now, what if you just changed the gearbox?
I don't know. Maybe that would be five grid places. Who knows? I don't know how this system works and what it's supposed to do and all that kind of good stuff, but I watched the engine blow up. They then changed it. They got it back out there. No penalty.
In the same day?
Yeah.
And theoretically, well, I mean, the cars aren't technically in park fermé until they're presented for qualifying.
Right.
And the funny thing about that is that after qualifying officially started, they were still...
The car wasn't ready yet.
Yeah, they were still bolting the engine in. So, it is odd. I'd like to maybe I'll do a little deeper dive into that and find out what it is. And
I'm not lobbying for a grid place penalty.
No.
Because I just like it.
You bring up an excellent point, and it isn't one that I had considered. I don't have an answer for you, but I would like to know what that answer is, if there's one out there.
Well, who knows? We had... cold weather leading up to race day. It was, you know, pretty chilly in China. Then we get to race day. We always say, are we going to be able to see the racetrack? What's going on with the smog? Beautiful day for a race.
No rain in the forecast, which, you know, has come to be an expected part of the weekend at some point, even if it's not race day.
No rain in the forecast. No, you know, really clear blue skies and looked beautiful. Everything looked great.
Chinese government, they've solved global warming. You know, they've solved all the natural, mishaps that occur. Fixed everything.
Well, it looked great. And I thought the circuit, I think the first corner, corners one through three, which to me are like one through two, but I guess they call it corners one through three. You get that big, it's like a 270-degree right-hander to start off.
And it's going uphill.
Yeah. And then you have that hard left-hander right afterwards.
Downhill.
It is such a fantastic complex. It is really, really a great opening first corner, complex.
And, the funny thing is, it's probably one of the slowest ones, it's the slowest corner on the track, I think.
Yes, turn three.
Yeah, the one at the bottom of the hill there. But it's so unique in that it gives you almost an infinite amount of racing lines to be able to take during the course of the event. So it isn't follow the leader through there by any stretch.
Absolutely not. You can take, like you said, so many different lines, and there's so many different preferred lines depending on where you are and where your competitor is, because if you take the inside line into, you know, turn one and two, you're then on the outside, you know, for turn three. But that's not necessarily the worst thing either, because then you can track out a little bit easier. I mean, it's a really, really cool complex. There's so many different opportunities. If you get it right, you can jump forward. If you get it wrong, you'll head backwards, though.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot at risk, but there's a lot to gain. And I mean, you remember Max, well, I think last year or maybe the year before, when he went three wide inside of Vettel and on the opening lap, and the three of them came together, or, you know, Max fainted in Sebastian's direction and Sebastian fainted towards Kimi and the two of them came together. I mean, there's a lot to be lost.
Yeah.
You know, in that term. But it's, again, they enter it at 270K, I think.
Yeah, it's a quick entrance.
So
if not 300
uphill,
plus,
you know, right hander, and yeah, it's very, very quick.
It's actually, I'm looking at the track map now. It's actually turns one through four, but it really is turns one and two, if you ask me. It's kind of like turn two at Sebring. Nobody even knows it exists, but it's there.
I've seen it.
I've driven it. I've just never really known that I've driven it, if that makes sense.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, nonetheless. Really a great complex. Opening was no disappointment here today either. Sebastian Vettel got a decent start. I thought Kimi Raikkonen probably got a better start. And so Sebastian Vettel does what Sebastian Vettel does, and he chopped down on his teammate and basically sent his teammate from, you know, second, maybe challenging for the lead, essentially back to fourth right out of the gate. I thought the move from Vettel was a little much, I thought.
I don't know that the move was. I mean, you we're looking at these things in hindsight.
Yeah.
What you got to remember is, you know, they're both on cold tires. And everybody at virtually every race dives to the inside, because obviously the staggered cars at the start gives the pole sitter the advantage. He wants to block the inside line going into a right-hand corner, so he dives down. Well, Kimi got a good start. So he pinched him. But what Kimi did was, and maybe rightfully so, he backed off on it hard when he got, you know, and everybody went around him on the outside.
Mm-hmm.
Because he was pinned to that inside, and he didn't want to overcook it, wash out the front end, and gather up somebody. So
his teammate.
Yeah, it was probably a prudent move. I think Sebastian had, you know, effectively cleared him, but Kimi just, he was swamped by everybody behind him coming up at, you know, full tilt boogie. So it wasn't necessarily a bad move. It was a bad result.
Well, after, because you can run side by side in that corner.
Mm-hmm.
You can run side by side in the first two corners, one and two. You can't really run side by side in three and four. People try to, but I guess you can a little bit.
You can get through there. It's just not a fair fight. The guy who's on the inside is ultimately going to prevail 9.5 times out of 10.
Well, Sebastian, if he would have stayed side by side with Kimi, he would have had that inside line. Instead, he kind of chopped over on top of him. Kimi backed off. You had a Red Bull and a Mercedes come through in front of him, and now all of a sudden, you've got Ferrari one, and then was it Bottas two?
Bottas was second.
Bottas two, and then Max Verstappen in third, Raikkonen in fourth, fifth was Ricciardo. Hamilton, and then Ricciardo right behind him.
Yeah.
So Hamilton's moving, you know. Moving backwards. Max, of course, makes up a ton of, you know, or makes up some spots and all that kind of stuff, which we're you know, used to seeing now on his, you know, kind of big maneuvers on at a start. And then we have kind of that first six kind of figured out there, and they would go run around there for a few laps and just kind of pound around there and looking racy, certainly. But it seems like Formula One now, after the start, after the opening two laps, once they start, you know, getting into DRS and everything, it seems like kind of the MO from the teams is kind of, hey, we're just going to sit here for a little bit and see how it goes. Let's not push the car too much. Let's make sure we have our tires underneath us. Let's get to that first stop. And then after we get to that first stop, then we'll start pushing again.
Yeah, because there's always strategy involved. You know, the undercut, the overcut, whatever you want to call, you know, from wherever you are coming at it from. is become a very, very valid tactic.
Yes.
And, you know, if teams think that they have the strategy in their favor, then they're almost willing to, you know, let the car kind of settle in, you know, make sure the pace is there, not, you know, not lose too much in terms of grip that would throw that strategy off. So if you expect your competitors to go to lap 20 and you know you're going to pit at lap 18, you know, you'll ride out the first 14 laps and then, you know, maybe you'll say, okay, it's go time. And, you know, you'll let somebody put in three blistering laps in order to make the undercut, you know, to get the gap as little as possible so that the undercut can be most effective. So you're right. There's a lot of riding around, you know, from lap one through, say, lap 15 or 16.
And then we had some excitement because we had really nobody kind of coming into the pits, and we had some back markers kind of coming in and some of the mid-pack teams kind of coming in and doing some different things. But the leaders, I thought, stayed out a little bit longer than I was expecting them to stay out in China. And then we saw them in a really interesting move, Red Bull stacked the pit stops, which I was not expecting them to do that.
Well, yeah, it's a pretty bold move because, you know, if anything in a 3-second pit stop goes bad, you don't have any margin to be able to remedy it before you've got, you know, two cars sitting, you know, waiting for one pit location. So yeah, it was a pretty bold move. I'm not sure where it came from, because, you know, usually teams are not that wedded to the strategy that both cars have to be in on the same lap in order to make a strategy work. You know, sometimes the teams will even, you know, run disparate strategies car to car. That obviously wasn't the case. And this is not something that we see very often, but it was bold.
It was a bold move, and they had the replay that they showed, which was slowed down on like a helmet cam of somebody in the pits. I mean, there was what, a second and a half, maybe 2 seconds in between Max leaving and Danny coming in.
Yeah, and think about it, because at the start, I mean, you can't plan for this going into the race because they're running fifth and they qualified fifth and sixth.
Right.
These guys are right next to each other. Theoretically, if the pecking order holds, they're still running fifth and sixth, maybe fourth and sixth, and the gap is pretty tight. At that point in time, you can't do that. So not only did they employ this strategy and they carried it out absolutely to perfection.
It was incredible. It was a great stop. Two great stops.
But they had to make that decision on the fly based on what they saw happen at the end of lap one. So, I mean, that just goes to show you all the moving parts, all the gears that are turning, you know, in the strategist's heads. And because there's just no way that they could have planned to have a sufficient gap between Max in third and Daniel in sixth to be able to carry out that strategy of a stacked pit stop without actually stacking anybody.
Yeah. Well, it worked perfectly for them. Then you have the Mercedes coming in. They come in. They pit. And Ferrari is still out there, you know, running around. And you know, they think they need 22 seconds roughly. Well, Bottas comes in, gets some new shoes on, goes out, puts on an incredible outlap, does Bottas. Then you have the call to bring in Sebastian Vettel. Vettel comes in. Kimi takes over the lead. Vettel comes out. And it's a good stop. It's like a 2.8, 2.9 second stop for the Ferrari. Out comes Vettel, and Bottas has jumped him.
Yeah, and here's where Ferrari's not paying attention. Esteban Ocon came in about 5 laps before them and put on a set of medium tires and was out there running blistering laps in the back of the field. And because he's in the back of the field, nobody's paying any attention to Esteban Ocon. But if they had been monitoring it, seeing what, which teams usually do.
Oh, yeah.
See what, you know, tires are getting put on what. I'm convinced that they had basically written out the Force India. Why would we watch what they do? you know, in a level of arrogance, you know, we're not generally accustomed to seeing. But that's just an assumption on my part. But they didn't pay attention to that.
I'm sure they watched it. I'm sure they knew it, but they didn't put enough weight on it, I'd say. And because it came out and it wasn't one of those neck and neck down to the wire first corner things. I mean, Botas was in front by a second and a half or so when Vettel came out.
Oh yeah, he covered him well. I mean, there was no drama. There was no drama.
No.
There wasn't even any interaction. I mean, it was basically he leapfrogged him. Credit Mercedes. The undercut worked exactly how it's supposed to. But then you had Ferrari, I think, make a strategic decision at that point in time.
Yes.
And basically what I think they agreed to do was sacrifice Kimi Raikkonen for the chance to benefit Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah, they basically, instead of bringing Raikkonen in, normally you would leave out, you'd leave him out an extra lap. Vettel's going to come in, or normally, yeah, Vettel would come in, he would get some new shoes, then next lap, Raikkonen, new shoes. Not this case. They left Raikkonen out, you know, Bottas has fresher tires, he's, you know, got about a 2 second gap or so over Vettel, and then you've got Bottas now catching up to Raikkonen.
Well, and don't forget, under a normal strategy, you know, you still have Lewis Hamilton and Danny Ricciardo in the back.
Right.
So Raikkonen's leading, but theoretically, he's not battling for the lead. He still has to pit. So he's got to figure out where they're going to be in relationship to Hamilton and Raikkonen so that he still has an opportunity to defend or bring the fight to them and not lose enough ground. That they had thrown all that out the window.
They did. They completely threw the idea of, okay, let's have, you know, let's count on Vettel being able to catch and pass Bottas. Let's pit Raikkonen now. Let's get him in. Maybe he'll come out. He'll probably come out behind Hamilton, but maybe he'll be able to challenge Hamilton. But now you're throwing out that Hamilton move. You're saying, okay, he's going to be behind, you know, Ricciardo now. He could get eclipsed by one of these mid-pack cars too if we keep him out there. Well, they kept him out there. Bottas catches him, slows up Bottas. Raikkonen then Vettel is able to catch up to Bottas. Raikkonen holds him off for as long as he can, and then Bottas makes a move. Raikkonen does the teammate thing to do and kind of stays offline a little bit and allows his teammate to go through, and then they are neck and neck, Vettel and Bottas.
Yeah, I mean, I think it probably didn't work the way Ferrari ideally would like it to have worked, but it did accomplish a goal. I mean, it did. The gap went away effectively. I mean,
yeah.
All of a sudden, Vettel is right on Bottas' gearbox, and Kimi, you know, has been sacrificed, and so then I think he came in, you know, shortly thereafter,
right.
Because he had to have some semblance of a finish. Obviously, team points matter. So you got to find a way at that point to resurrect some sort of finish for Kimi to be able to contribute in points.
Well, he comes in. He gets some new shoes. He goes back out. Everybody is on their new tires up there up front. About lap 18-20 or so now. They're kind of pounding around. You've got Bottas out there in the lead. Vettel, you know, catching him and everything. And then you have something in the back of the action, which it just goes to show how you can go from a high of finishing in fifth with your Honda power plant and everything to the lows of your teammates running into each other, because Pierre Gasly and Brendan Hartley decided they were going to run into each other. And, that was not good.
I'm with Martin Brundle on this thing. This was a move by Gasly that was hopelessly optimistic.
Hopelessly optimistic is a great way to describe it, because there was zero chance of this move working.
Absolutely. I mean, there was no way that Hartley was going to go through the corner in a way that would have given Gasly sufficient room to execute, not for them to just make it through the corner together, but for him to execute a pass.
Yeah, he couldn't have made the corner whether there was a car on the outside or not. He would have overshot the corner. He was the last of the late breakers, but he would have ended up in the gravel trap anyway, I think. He didn't because he ran into Brendan Hartley.
Yeah, and it's just, you know, I mean, he may have had DRS. He may have been approaching it at a higher rate of speed. You know, one of the drivers had alluded to a tailwind, you know, down the front, down the back straightaway, that long straightaway, you know, which was catching some guys off guard. But honestly, at that point in the race, it shouldn't catch you off guard. You've already got 20, 25 laps under your belt. Yeah, there's no excuses for that. And then the second thing is, you don't wreck your teammate.
Yeah, I mean, that's
rule number one. You don't wreck your teammate.
No, do not wreck your teammate. That you're absolutely right. Rule number one might be beat your teammate, but rule number two is don't wreck your teammate. Well, with that, we have that coming together. We have carbon fiber bits all over the track now. Then we kind of let it sit there for a couple of laps, and then we have some more cars kind of running over stuff. And they say, all right, safety car. We're going to put the safety car out. We got to clean up the track. And I don't necessarily disagree with it. I'm not talking about little shards of little things here and there. I'm talking about some big chunks that, you know.
There was a mirror laying on the ground. Yeah. I mean, there were some pretty big bits. And this is, you know, where, you know, I mean, I give these guys all the credit because this is something, you know, the leaders were like coming through that corner when the safety car aspect was thrown. They only had, what, 5 seconds maybe to make a decision whether to pit or not pit.
So safety car comes out. What are you going to do here? You're coming through it. Yes, you're coming through that corner, which is the kind of entry to the back stretch there, right? You're through the back stretch, and you're coming through that.
Yeah, it's the hairpin leading to the short chute right. That leads to the front straightaway. I mean, there's not a lot of time, you know, to be able to strategize, get those orders to the team, you know, get the team set up, even though, you know, they're generally ready for stuff like this. But there was almost zero chance to react.
Well,
for the front runners.
So the front runners, Sebastian Vettel and Valtteri Bottas, they stay out. Lewis Hamilton, they could have said to Lewis Hamilton, box, box, box. They did not. They did for the Red Bulls. They brought the Red Bulls in and they said, all right, box this lap. Both guys, again, they stack the pits. Again, they do an excellent job. Max actually makes this really interesting move. On the pit entrance, you have, you know, the part where you exit the track, all right? So you exit the track. That's not where the pit lane speed limit starts. That's still technically part of the racetrack, that area. And then you have a line up in front of that right at the entry to pit road, and that is where the pit lane speed limit starts. Well, Max gets off, and he's behind some back marker who decides to get off, too.
It was one of the Toro Rossos.
Yeah.
And I think he may have been wounded.
Well, whatever it is, he jumps around the car and makes a nice move. He does the smart thing as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he effectively passed on the entrance to pit lane and got it wowed down prior to the speed limiter engagement.
Yeah. Got it in there. They stack the pits. They come out. They're pretty much in the same position as they were when they entered the pits because now everybody else is kind of wowed up and slowed down. They come back out. And they're now breathing down Lewis Hamilton's neck with fresh tires.
And Lewis is saying, guys, am I wrong? But there are a lot of guys around me with new tires.
This was a missed opportunity from both Ferrari and Mercedes.
Yeah, for sure.
Absolutely missed opportunity. Maybe I understand you can't bring in Bottas and Vettel. You didn't have enough time to make that decision. But they could have done it for Raikkonen, and they could have done it for Lewis, and they didn't.
And here's where I fault Mercedes a little bit more than I fault Ferrari. Ferrari in Bahrain had gone to the soft tires with the expectation that they were going to pit again, and then strategy forced them to bail on that. And, you know, we also know how, you know, Vettel ended up winning the race with no grip.
Right.
In that same race, they put Lewis Hamilton on the medium tires. And those medium tires started to deg in about 30 laps. Well, we're still, what, 40 laps, you know, from the finish.
Or no, we're at this point. At this point now, though, we're about 20 laps from the finish.
Okay. Well, then that doesn't hold as true as I thought it did.
Well, they put on soft tires. Everybody else is on mediums up front. So you've got, you know, softer, brand new tires on the Red Bulls back there. They come out, they're right around Lewis. And I'm thinking, this is going to be good stuff. This is going to be some good stuff. And we were not disappointed. What ensued was the next 20 laps or so were just fantastic. They get the track cleaned up, which, by the way, can we get them some decent brooms? What is going on with the brooms?
Those were not OSHA approved.
What is going on with those brooms that they're using? Like, get them, you know, those big street brooms? I actually have one at my house. You can buy them anywhere.
It's like they were built with like thatch or something like that, you know? I mean,
seriously.
It was pitiful.
It was like this, you know, it was like a broom that you see a witch ride or something like that.
Oh yeah.
I mean, maybe that's what a broom looks like in, you know, in China or whatever. I don't know, but can we get them a decent, you know, polycarbonate, you know, frame with a good handle and, you know, some
These weren't hand-me-downs. All the
brushes.
Brooms matched.
Yes. They did.
They were all matched.
Hand-built, I'm sure, by somebody. But can we get some decent brooms going at the Chinese Grand Prix?
Well, maybe by next year.
Okay. Well, the brooms were ridiculous, but the racing was fantastic because you've got Max in front of Danny, both behind Lewis Hamilton, ready and raring to go up front. You've got Bottas, you know, the Ferrari then there. Of Vettel, I am ready for some fantastic action. You've got Raikkonen behind Lewis at this point? Yes. Raikkonen was behind Lewis and the Red Bulls were behind Raikkonen. Well, we go back to green. Bottas does an excellent job on the start. He does an excellent job getting a great jump on Sebastian Vettel. And, you know, he's out to about a 1.5 second lead or so, not in DRS range, all that kind of good stuff. And then the Red Bulls kind of start to come alive and everybody else kind of doesn't. And we see Max and Lewis going at it. And Max, basically, it doesn't matter if you can pass there or not. He's going to make a move.
Well, he's certainly not afraid of trying.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's some youthful enthusiasm and you know, honestly, some of it may be ego because you recall his Brazilian, you know, drive in the rain and how much accolades he got from that. And, you know, Max, the brilliant passer, and he has made some passes in the past that have been pretty bold. And he's also made some ill-fated passes or ill-fated attempts, if you will.
Well, we saw some of the ill-fated attempts today where he basically got alongside Lewis, couldn't get it done, pulled back out, got alongside him again, and then ran off the track, which allowed Ricardo through. So then you had Ricardo breathing down the neck of Lewis Hamilton. And then we saw, quite frankly, one of my favorite passes I think I've ever seen in Formula One, coming down into that 14 hairpin there, where he was so far back. I thought, okay, there's no chance he's going to make this move here. And I'm sure Lewis Hamilton, because he wasn't down low to defend or anything, I'm sure Lewis Hamilton thought, there's no way he's going to make this move here. Danny Ricciardo put on an absolute clinic, though, on how to make a pass, a late break pass. He stepped out of line very late, you know, waited to get on the binders. He did, and he got it slowed down. He made the corner just fine. There was never a doubt that he was going to make the corner. There was never a doubt, quite frankly, that he was going to run into Lewis Hamilton either. Just an incredible move that everybody kind of thought, where did that come from? I did not see that one coming, but he made it stick, and on he went. Just an incredible, incredible pass.
And here's what's funny is that everybody says, where did that come from? That's been Ricardo's MO over the last couple of years, the last 3-4 years. He has been one of the, I don't want to call him just a late breaker because it's not simply that, but it's eating up 3 or 4 car lengths, you know, disadvantage under braking and still making the pass I mean, not out of control. He's not sliding it through the apex and, you know, and having to defend against, you know, the undercut and so forth. They're just clean passes. He's not running anybody off the road. He's not, you know, initiating contact. But I think you're right in that he catches people by surprise because Lewis was well into the braking zone near the turn-in when, you know, when Danny finally decided that he was coming up the inside. And Lewis correctly did the right thing. He was on less grippy tires. You know, he understood that the Red Bull had pace. You just got to give it up at that point, and Lewis did.
Well, he did. He gets through, and then off he goes, you know, now to go hunt down the leaders. He's now essentially made it up onto the podium, has Ricardo, but, you know, Max is right there now, too. Max is behind, and he's there with Hamilton. He eventually gets by Hamilton, although not nearly as cleanly, but gets by nonetheless. So now you've got Max, you know, chasing down Danny, and Danny chasing down, you know, the two leaders. Well, Ricardo catches up to Vettel and makes relatively short work of him. You know, not really a challenge to get by Sebastian Vettel for Danny Ricardo.
Yeah, and there was, you know, some question as to, you know, how hard would Vettel fight. I think an earlier version of Vettel would have given him a little more grief. But, you know, the Vettel this year is obviously thinking big picture.
Well, he gets by him. He's now, you know, close to Bottas, but let's not talk about that yet. Let's talk about Max Verstappen catching up to Sebastian Vettel. And he does catch up to Sebastian Vettel. He catches him and then promptly runs into him afterwards. You know, same move, tries to do basically what Ricardo did on Lewis. Doesn't quite work quite as well. He runs into the side of Vettel. You know, they both kind of spin off and continue. And Vettel, you know, lights up the rear tires in a big way, getting spun around. He gets off, you know, Verstappen gets off, and on they go.
Well, and the funny thing there was, and I say funny, you know, here you had, I think that was third and fourth place at that point in time. You had Hamilton in fifth, Raikkonen in sixth. It happened just in front of Hamilton. Hamilton was actually forced wide at the hairpin. Here comes Kimi. Thank you very much. He gains three positions in one corner because he was able to sneak down the inside. He got Hamilton as well as the two cars that had spun. He goes from sixth to third in one corner.
Yeah. Smart move there by Raikkonen. Vettel now kind of back there, and Max Verstappen, you know, kind of moves up after he gets past everybody. Then you have Max kind of moving up. He actually goes back and he passes Lewis on track later on in the race and moves up, but he has a 10-second penalty added to his time, you know, added to his finishing time because of wrecking Sebastian Vettel. Before we get there, let's talk about the move that Ricardo put on Valtteri Bottas with, what, 10 laps left or so?
Thereabouts.
This was a move. It wasn't, such, you know, the move on Hamilton where kind of came out of nowhere. Well, you know, he moved to the inside. You saw Bottas cover, and he moves to cover. And Danny Ricciardo kind of keeps on it, though. He doesn't necessarily back out or, you know, kind of pull out of the move. He sticks to it, and Bottas kind of realizes that he's coming through, allows him some racing room, and then Bottas gets him and runs away.
Well, this is, you know, this is what I call an old school pass, which is, you know, odd because some of these guys race under DRS, and that's where so much of the overtaking is now. But, you know, the first pass that we talked about that Ricardo put on Hamilton was DRS-induced. That gap closes up because DRS is enforced or in play, and Ricardo's got a higher terminal speed going into the braking zone. This was simply a draft. Ricardo was all over Bottas, you know, in the previous, you know, the 1-2-3-4 complex. That we had talked about, and coming up the hill toward the first hairpin, I think it's turn six, maybe it's turn five. He just got a run on him. You know, he had better traction off of the corner, up the hill, and you know the normal move is for the lead driver to block, which Bottas did. But you know, he did the sporting thing. He could have blocked all the way over to the edge of the track, but the rule stipulates that if you remember the old Nico Rosberg move from years ago, you got to leave the guy a car width.
Right.
That's pretty much all he left him.
Yeah.
But you know, you could tell Danny got on the brakes, and then when he saw that he wasn't going to get closed out, he just released the brakes and rolled right up there, knowing he had superior grip when he got to the apex. So, I mean, it was a fair move on Bottas' part. It was an excellent pass by Ricciardo.
It was. It was great. I for a long time thought Lewis Hamilton was the best kind of driver, you know, behind the wheel racing other cars kind of thing. I think Fernando is probably the best driver out there who's able to get a time out of the car. I think I for a long time thought, you know, Vettel was probably one of the most complete drivers overall from a standpoint of the technical knowledge, the ability to qualify, race, practice, all that kind of stuff. I think Daniel Ricciardo could be the best passer in Formula One, best wheel-to-wheel racer out there.
Well, unfortunately, in recent years, he's had to pass more people than, you know, say, Lewis Hamilton. But I think Lewis is, you know, in a car that is the equal or better of somebody that he's chasing. You know, I mean, you think in terms of that race in Hungary was it Hungary or A1 Ring? I think it was Hungary, where he had the car caught on fire in qualifying or something, and he's down in, you know, 18th or 19th position, and he finishes top five on a track like that. I mean, that's you got to have some serious passing skills, and you have to have a superior car.
Well, it was really, really impressive stuff that we saw from Ricciardo today, and him getting the win in the 2018 Heineken Chinese Grand Prix. Let's run down the finishing order, shall we? Danny Ricciardo gets the win for Red Bull. Behind him, Valtteri Bottas and Mercedes. Excuse me, Kimi Raikkonen in third for Ferrari after having this kind of race that looked like it wouldn't go anywhere. He ends up finishing in third. Lewis Hamilton in fourth for Mercedes. Max Verstappen finishes in fifth with his penalty and everything. Nico Hülkenberg up in sixth for Renault. Fernando Alonso in seventh for McLaren after he was able to pass Sebastian Vettel at the end of the race, towards the end of the race, who finished in eighth position. Carlos Sainz in ninth, Kevin Magnussen in tenth. Vettel just had no tires left, and the car was just done. The car was just done.
Yeah, I mean, I think lighting up the cars during the spin and shortly thereafter didn't do the rears any good. And I mean, I was watching the intervals. He was losing a half a second to the Renault.
Yeah.
So there was clearly nothing left, and he just nursed it home.
Yeah. With that, I think we might see some new tire strategies in Formula One here, because it seems like everybody wants to try and run a one-stop race this year. Now, this was a different, you know, two-stop strategy, obviously, but, you know, they were the Red Bulls were so much faster than everybody else with new shoes on them.
Well, and Toto Wolff was interviewed after the race, and he obviously acknowledged that they didn't get the call right, at least for Lewis, if not both drivers. And he just made the simple comment. He says, we thought at that point in time track position was better than stopping to get tires. And I'm thinking, dude, you got 20 laps left.
Yeah.
Would you not take the – I mean, you might go from – I mean, Bottas is in second place or he's in the lead. You know, perhaps, you know, he can gap, you know, a sixth or a seventh place car. But there's no excuse for not bringing Lewis in.
Yeah.
He was fifth at the time. It just doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So I think, you know, you're right to hope that, you know, this will open the eyes to some of the teams as to what the possible is. Versus being, you know, something being considered impossible. And it could hopefully lead to some more excitement that will, you know, later on in the year like we saw today.
Well, I thought it was an absolutely fantastic race from lights to flag. Just really enjoyed it. Really a great race. On that, let's run down the championship, shall we? Three races in, three of 20, 21 races down now. The Drivers' Championship, Sebastian Vettel in the lead, 54 points. Right behind him, Lewis Hamilton with 45. Valtteri Bottas in third with 40. Danny Ricciardo, 37. That's with a retirement there in Bahrain. Kimi Raikkonen with 30 in fifth. With a retirement there in Bahrain as well. Then you've got Alonso up there sitting at sixth. Consistency is what has kind of been, winning them points and good points and everything this year.
Sure. I mean, that's what it's going to take because on outright pace, they're still not there yet.
Constructors' Championship, Mercedes in the lead, albeit by 1 point. 85 points for them. Ferrari in second with 84. Then you've got Red Bull, 55. Then you go down to McLaren, Renault, Scuderia, Toro Rosso, and the Haas Ferrari, Force India, and Williams back there in last. No points yet for Williams.
Not surprising.
Yeah. Well, it is in the grand scale if you look at the history of Williams and everything, sure. But not surprising this year.
That's not Williams of 2018.
No. The Williams of old is not the Williams of 2018. You are absolutely right. You've got Perez, Leclerc, Grosjean, Stroll, Sorotkin, and Hartley that have not scored points yet. You know, Roman Grosjean is surprising because you have good points finishes, for Magnussen scoring, a fifth in Bahrain and then 10th in China. It's kind of surprising to see that Grosjean hasn't had a good finish up there.
No, and I think it's much of his own doing. He's not able to get on top of the car the way Magnussen is and to produce race results. You know, he might have pace in qualifying. He might have some speed here and there, but he's not very racy.
No, he's not. He just seems still kind of at issue with some of the, pit wall stuff kind of thing. You know, it seemed like more of an issue last year, but seems like he's not quite, jiving with the team, it seems like.
Yeah, it's something they got to get on top of because, we're in year three now, so
yeah.
You don't have a whole lot of excuses at this point.
Yeah. Well, we are off next week in Formula One, 2 weeks away from Azerbaijan, Baku, everybody's favorite.
I know. I'm going to go sit on the patio and watch the race.
Plenty of seats still available.
$20.
Yeah. We will talk. We will be here next week. We'll cover the Long Beach Grand Prix and IMSA there from Long Beach next week. That race was on Fox today. We'll also talk a little bit about ESPN and the broadcast and how it's changed and for the better, too. Doing a great job, I think, now. On that, Mr. Wire, before we get out of here, anything else, my friend?
No, great girls back in Monaco and Russia. And Lewis Hamilton says, thank you, Jesus.
All right. Well, on that note, we will get out of here. For Chris Wire, my name's Clark Sprinkle. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Until next week. Bye-bye. Bop, bop.